Hello all, and welcome to the teleclass, The State of Pandemic Influenza Planning in Ontario Acute Care Hospitals, the Need for a Pandemic Preparedness Learning Portal. My name is Paul Weber, and I believe that is probably the longest teleclass title ever. However, like they always say, good things come in packages with really long names. Our faculty today is known worldwide. Just last month, he was in Australia, and he gave a keynote lecture at their conference there. We broadcasted that as a teleclass. His professional work has taken him around the globe to a great many places where there was a need for the kind of infection prevention and control expertise that he brings. This man, of course, is my good friend, Dr. Dick Zoutman. Dick is the director of the Infection Prevention and Control Program at Kingston General Hospital in Kingston, Ontario. He is a professor at Queen's University and the holder of a great many more positions than I have time to enumerate here. He is known as a tremendous communicator and a very compassionate man. And it is a great pleasure to have him with us for this unscheduled teleclass today. To speak to the need for Pandemic Preparedness Learning Portal from Queen's University, I am pleased to present Dr. Dick Zoutman. Dick.
Thank you, Paul. It's a pleasure to be able to give you this presentation. It's been a labor of love for us here at Queen's for 2 years. And I will acknowledge my collaborators in this project, Doug Ford, Matt Melanenshin, Dr. Brian Schwartz, and Callie Gunn, who have composed the team working on this project that I'm reporting on you today. Well, are we ready yet? In a post-SARS era, the United States General Accounting Office, which is sort of the Auditor General equivalent, conducted a survey of hospital preparedness for emerging infectious disease threats throughout the United States. And they looked at 556 hospitals over 47 states, completing a survey on the extent of their preparedness. And they found that many hospitals had plans for SARS, but very few had coordinated them with other facilities or other jurisdictions, something that's, of course, really important if you're going to have an effective implementation of an emergency plan, is the coordination between jurisdictions. Infection control and certain specialty services representation in these plans were limited, particularly, and this is important, small and rural hospitals were challenged in this regard. Well, does Dr. Know best? Maybe not. A recent poll in December of 2005 conducted here in Canada by Environics of the College of Family Physicians of Canada, who represent our family physicians, demonstrated that a majority of Canadians, when asked, citizens asked, if there was a pandemic, where would you go? And they would go, well, to their family doctor. Well, or do they? Because in a separate survey then conducted concurrently by family doctors, only 20% of those family doctors indicated that they felt they had the supports to handle such an emergency. So there's quite a mismatch in the expectations and in the capacity. Going back to the states for a minute, the Association of State Health Officials, which is the official organization for state and territorial health units in the United States, in November 2005, did a further survey of 49 states, territories, or districts, and they found that only a minority had plans in place for antiviral stockpiling, and over a third of the states did not have a prioritization schedule for distributing these antivirals, just as an example. Another important issue around a pandemic is, well, who's in charge? Command and control will play a very important role in the effectiveness of a pandemic plan. And 29% of the states had not named a pandemic influenza coordinator, and most states surveyed had not attempted to quantify the personal or the fiscal resources needed for an effective statewide response to an outbreak of pandemic influenza by November 2005. Well, what was the purpose of our project? Well, it's called the Pandemic Preparedness Planning Portal Project. Bit of a mouthful, so we locally here call it P5, and we invite you to do so as well. The purpose of this project is to develop a training and a preparation framework for managing severe respiratory illness, such as pandemic influenza, for hospitals in the province of Ontario in Canada. The objective then is to develop really a comprehensive learning portal, a web-based portal with educational materials and assistive materials to permit hospitals to plan effectively for a pandemic. Our intended audience for the respiratory illness planning portal includes both frontline healthcare workers who will be providing the services during a pandemic, but also the managers and the clinical leaders who are charged with the preparations for the pandemic. And in particular, we were focusing particular attention to the needs of our smaller and rural hospitals who undoubtedly have unique challenges when planning for a pandemic. The delivery method for our portal is web-based. It'll be highly visual and interactive, including audio and some video. The mixture and the blending of the multimedia methodologies really creates a rich multimedia experience, facilitating understanding and retention in the application of the information provided. It's interesting to note now that computer-based education has come of age. Curran and Fleet evaluated the peer-reviewed literature of evaluative outcomes of web-based continuing professional development for health professionals. And they found that in 31 studies, including 25 where they evaluated the satisfaction of the learners, and 16 which examined learning outcomes, and 2 that assessed changes in clinician practice. Changing physicians' practices, particularly around drug prescribing, for example, is notoriously difficult. And they found that web-based education was both enjoyable by the users, found to be highly satisfactory, and that there were proven improvements in knowledge, attitude, and skill domains, and that practice changes are associated with web-based learning, suggesting to us that this is a good medium to get the message out. The criteria for quality in web-based education are 7 as described by Noe and Colquitt in 2003. You need to have objectives. The content has to be meaningful to those taking the training. You have to provide learning aids. There has to be some opportunity for practice of what is being learned and the opportunity for feedback, the capacity to interact with other trainees, and efficient coordination and arrangements. Now, in our pandemic portal, we can't meet all 7 of these because it's not a live portal in the sense that there's immediate feedback. But otherwise, we're able to meet most of these criteria, and I'll show that to you later. Well, we needed to do a needs assessment, and I want to report to you on those results now. We conducted an Ontario-wide assessment of all Ontario hospitals to ask them what is the state of your pandemic preparedness as of the time of the survey. We surveyed them for their capacity, their at the facility level, local and regional levels. And we asked them about infection control and personal protective equipment procedures, about communication pathways and protocols, both internal and external, about education and training, patient triage and controlling facility access, the occupational health and vaccination protocols, and accessibility in the distribution of supplies, particularly antivirals and antimicrobial agents and protective equipment. We also queried the sites regarding human resources and plans for surge capacity, the control of hospital operations for elective and urgent care, and planning for alternate care sites and mortuary facilities, emergency and critical care services, and their plans to provide services and assistance to their own facility staff. And again, in particular, we focused on the unique requirements and challenges of smaller and rural hospitals throughout Ontario. The needs assessment purpose was to determine then, what is the state of pandemic planning in Ontario hospitals? How are we doing? And then to use this information to design our web portal to help hospitals plan effectively for pandemics. So the needs assessment was informing the development of the portal. The survey was sent out in early 2007 to all acute care hospitals in Ontario. And for the first time in my experience, I had done, we completed this survey as an online, and we made it an option to do it online, or you could do it paper and pencil. And I'm sure some of you listening filled out your survey, and I want to thank you for doing that very much. I wasn't certain whether an online survey was going to be effective, whether people would do it or not, and I'll tell you how it turned out. The survey was to be completed by the person most responsible for the pandemic plan. Well, the response rate blew us away. 77% or 97 out of 126 acute care hospitals in Ontario, Canada completed the survey. For a survey of this nature, this complexity, that was an overwhelming landslide response. And much to my pleasure, 87% of the respondents chose to complete the survey online. Well, the first question was whether you have had and tested a pandemic plan at all. So do you have a pandemic plan was the first question. Well, 75% of the respondents did. 25% did not. But very interestingly, only 16% had formally tested their plan, either as a tabletop or as an actual live exercise. So 25% didn't have a plan in 2007, and about 85% had not yet tested their plan. Looking into this more fully, we compared this with the hospital size, whether they had a plan, had tested their plan, did it track to the hospital size, and indeed it appears to. You can tell that the hospitals that are larger, particularly those over 300 beds, had a plan at least 82-83% of the time, whereas smaller hospitals, particularly those, the really smaller hospitals, 30 beds or less, only 64% of them had a plan. So clearly, again, the smaller hospitals are challenged in this regard. Likewise, with respect to having tested the plan, the testing that has gone on has generally gone on in the much larger hospitals and is yet to be seen in any meaningful way in the smaller hospitals as of the date of this survey. We looked at the catchment area, again, whether they had or tested their plan. And again, that seems to play a role. Primary rural hospitals, again, were less likely to have tested their plan or to have a plan than those that were mixed urban-rural or those that were primary urban. Again, size tracks similarly. We asked the respondents whether they felt that their influenza planning process was adequately resourced. Well, not very many strongly agreed with that, and indeed more than two-thirds disagreed or strongly disagreed. So it's clear that, in at least two-thirds to three-quarters of the hospitals have identified the resources for the pandemic planning as being an important challenge for them. With respect to the time frames, were they realistic or were they not? In general, 65% agreed or strongly agreed that the time frames were reasonable, but a third did not feel the time frames were entirely reasonable. This one I find particularly interesting. We asked whether the local health unit, public health agency, had been consulted when your hospital was developing its pandemic plan, and 21% had not yet consulted with their local public health agency or local public health unit. And I think that's a considerable concern as they will play an essential role, certainly throughout Ontario, a mandated role in pandemic activities. With respect to collaboration with other facilities in your region, again, the extent of collaboration is about 50-50. 50% of hospitals had had moderate to extensive collaboration with other facilities in their catchment, but 50% really identified they had only a small amount of collaboration or not at all. So clearly, this is an identified area for future work in collaborating with other facilities. And when we explored that question in more depth, what about coordinating the specifics of clinical care and direct health services in your bordering jurisdictions, in your facilities, the results were quite dramatic in that about 80%, almost a full 80%, had not had extensive coordination in this regard. And so clearly, coordinating health care delivery in the region is still a major concern in pandemic planning throughout the hospitals in Ontario. We asked respondents, well, are you satisfied with your plan? Are you happy with what you have? You could argue that most hospitals, you would want nobody to say they were entirely satisfied with their plan, recognizing that a pandemic plan is an evergreen document. You should never feel that it's ever entirely complete. So what we got was kind of what we expected. 69% of hospitals said they were somewhat satisfied, and 18% satisfied, which is about 75%, or 85%, excuse me, and about 13% said they were not satisfied at all. So those results may indicate that people are aware that they need to keep working on their plans, but the satisfaction level still is a little bit on the low side. We asked respondents to identify priority areas for a pandemic learning portal if we were to create such a thing, which we've done. What things would you like to see in it? And these are percentages, and you can see that the challenges of smaller and rural hospitals came out loud and strong. That validated our belief that this was going to be an important area, and certainly allowed us to focus our activities in the portal development around the needs of smaller and rural hospitals. Human resource issues were felt to be highly important, identified by 54% of respondents, and training likewise were fell in under the top three. So small and rural hospital challenges, human resources, and training were the top three. The next were clinical training, planning, and ethics. And I will flag ethics as we go further along with this. We asked, well, what kind of an approach would you like in a pandemic portal to assist you in these areas? 90% virtually asked for example pandemic templates from other facilities or experience from other facilities in particular. And that informed us a lot. We thought that was very powerful. And what that meant is that any content that we would build into the portal needed to come from our peers. And so in the pandemic portal, as I'll show you, when we get there, we decided to use content from peer group hospitals, particularly smaller and rural hospitals, but not exclusively so, as the basis for the content, because it's what your peers are doing, it's real, and it speaks directly to your needs. The other two areas that were identified were checklists and various presentations. Again, PowerPoint and related delivery methods are highly acceptable and desirable. And there was a request for interactive sessions. That was a challenge that we were not able to meet in the sense that that would require a website to be continuously monitored, which was just outside the scope of our capacity due to funding. Full motion video was about 60%, and again, it raises issues with respect to capacity in terms of your own computer network has to be able to handle that kind of high-speed volume, and the web server would have to be able to manage it. And for a lot of those reasons, we limited our video content. Not to say we excluded it, but we had to limit it. And text-based materials, meaning, you know, fell out at about 42%, and we have provided some of that as well. So this was immensely helpful as we set out to design the web portal. So our conclusions regarding the pandemic plans are that, as it turns out, 75% of hospitals have a plan. 25% did not. That the teaching hospitals all had a plan, but smaller hospitals, only 63% actually had a pandemic plan. Over 90% of hospitals in the Greater Toronto Area and the eastern reaches of the Ontario Hospital Association hospital regions in Ontario had plans, and 70% of hospitals in the northern, the southwest, and the central west regions had plans. Something about the eastern end of Ontario that's got a little more planning going on but 70% in the other areas and 90% in the Greater Toronto Area. And only two-thirds of rural hospitals overall had plans, and this speaks to the challenges and that they faced in doing this work. Only 16% had pandemic plans have tested them, 40% of the teaching hospitals have tested their plans, but only 5% of the smaller hospitals. And 10% of northern and southwestern regions had tested their hospitals, and 29% of urban have tested, but only 8% of rural. So clearly, having a plan and then testing the plan in the smaller rural communities is the ultimate challenge. Cooperating with other organizations, again, 80% have consulted with public health, but only half have collaborated moderately or to a great deal with other facilities, and really coordinating around health services and clinical care services is only just beginning as of 2007. Most thought their pandemic process could do with more funding. You hear that a lot, but lots of things in hospitals, and 65% agreed that the timeframes were reasonable. And again, only 18% they were satisfied with their plans, and none were very satisfied. And perhaps that's what we would expect. So from this, we concluded that a comprehensive program to help hospitals, especially small and rural hospitals, develop and test their pandemic plans was a valuable exercise and a worthwhile endeavor. What I'd like to do now in the second part of this presentation is to talk to you about further results relating to the content of the plans, because we had hospitals tell us what was actually in their plans, and that's quite informative as well. We asked hospitals, well, who did you consult or where did you go to as a resource in developing your pandemic plan? And happily, 99%, that number may be cut off on your slide, the top bar, consulted the Ontario Health Plan for Pandemic Influenza. This wonderful document is developed by the EMU, the Emergency Measures Unit in the Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care in Ontario. It's updated late summer. It is comprehensive, over 400 pages of every resource you could possibly want, and it's highly vetted through stakeholder groups and really sets a high standard in terms of quality. And so it's very good to know that it is the premier resource for hospitals doing their pandemic planning. Likewise, the Canadian Pandemic Influenza Plan through the Public Health Agency of Canada is also a highly sought-after resource, and it is, I know, in the process of more updates as we speak, and again, is a very important and critical resource. The WHO, World Health Organization, Influenza Preparedness Plans, Likewise, have been very informative, as have been pandemic plans from other hospitals, so we share them. That's a good thing to see. The WHO also has a very interesting set of checklists for influenza planning, and hospitals are also relying on municipal emergency plans, and sometimes plans from other countries, some of which are magnificent, and from other provinces as well. So there's a lot of sharing going on. But it is good to see that the Ontario Health Plan for Pandemic Influenza and the Canadian Pandemic Influenza Plan are the two go-to resources on this topic. With respect to the extent of pandemic influenza plan based on the Incident Management System, or IMS, we found that 65% of hospitals have either extensively or moderately based their plan on the IMS model. Time doesn't permit me to go into incident management methodology. I'm sure you're all aware. It is a basic structure of how you structure your pandemic response team. So everybody's role is very clearly laid out. It's part of emergency preparedness, and it has its history in forest fires and other emergency services areas where it has been extensively been evaluated and perfected. And it's the recommended model upon which to build your pandemic plan. So it is good to see, but it's not universal. And so that is a point of some concern, that we need to make sure that hospitals in Ontario, at least, are aware that the IMS model is the preferred model. And we included an IMS module, by the way, in the Pandemic Portal product. The all-important command and control responsibilities being addressed in pandemic plans were present in 85% of the pandemic plans, and decision-making was identified as to who does what in 78%. So there are still some gaps in the all-important command and control responsibilities, and that may reflect either incompleteness of the plans or a lack of connectedness to the other community services, particularly the role of the local public health unit or public health agency. And I draw your attention to the last one, which is having an ethical framework. 65% of the pandemic plans identified to us had some ethical framework, but that means really 35% did not. And that's a concern because that's essential because of the nature of the decisions that will be made. And we're going to come back to that in a minute. With respect to the key human resource components, remember the needs survey suggested this was very important. 90% have identified what services they would suspend during a pandemic. Well, that's good. That's essential. One would argue it's sometimes the easiest thing to decide upon. Obviously, they're not easy decisions, but it's the most available to you. Identification of services to continue has been identified in 85%. Strategies, however, for communicating with staff have been developed in only 3/4 of the plans, and the potential role for volunteers and HR staffing inventories, again, only in 75% of the hospitals have this covered off, which are critical components and will continue to need more emphasis. Redeployment centers, projections of staff availability, and other labor relation issues still have a long ways to go in the human resource components of our pandemic plan. Another area of human resources was, you know, the potential role for retirees, training strategy, and an HR inventory that lists your specific skill sets are there about 60% of the time, and potential role for health science students and the projections of staff for the essential services about half. And clearly staffing for alternative care sites and potential roles for family members have largely not been addressed. Now the role of alternative care sites in Ontario, at least, is becoming clearer in the current version of the Ontario Health Plan for an Influenza Pandemic. Well, what about the plans that identify the surge capacity regarding the number of beds? Well, that's identified in 97% of the plans, and that's good. Number of ventilators, well, that is going to be important, and that's there in 78%, but still has a ways to go because it's one that's critical. And the on-site supplies and the reducing clinical elective services are coming in at around 90%. However, we would note that morgue facilities for surge capacity are only identified in 74%, and of course, the great bane of many hospitals' existence, parking, has largely not been addressed, which is a really challenging issue for many of us. And perhaps integration with public transit in your community may be a way to look at that. We are asked as hospitals in Ontario to have a 4-week stockpile of supplies. And how are we doing on that? Well, the respirators, N95 respirators, if you think they have a role, 93%. Surgical masks, the same, obviously done together, 93%. Gloves and gowns, 96%. Face shields, hand hygiene products all appear to be in pretty good order. We note that temperature and blood pressure supplies, disinfectants, diagnostic supplies, and cleaning supplies, however, start to fall off, and these are going to be critical supplies during a pandemic and are part of what we need to have available. Particularly, we draw attention to diagnostic supplies, which will be likely subjected to interruptions in supply chain, like many other supplies. The other areas are various instructions and forms deceased body management supplies, likewise, and cots, for example, only 32% have sorted out cots and dressing supplies for injection. So clearly there's an ongoing, I guess, shopping list, if you will, that needs to be addressed in the supply issues for pandemic planning. What about the infection control and other occupational health components of the plan? How are we making out? Well, we know there's gaps in the vaccine priority planning process, and it's at least addressed, if not in total and in part, in 90% of the plans. Antivirals are addressed to some extent in 94%. However, ventilation and air handling, which will be important, only about half. The other areas of personal protective equipment, influenza transmission, routine practices for infection control, hurrah, 100%. That makes us infection control people smile, doesn't it? Hand hygiene, likewise, so essential and so effective, 97%. So there's some really good things here. Infection control is looking pretty good. We have to consider some of the ventilation and air handling issues if, you know, what we feel is going to be necessary for our hospital. With respect to antivirals, this, of course, is controversial because we don't really know what antiviral may or may not be effective at that point in time. However, stockpiling for treating patients has been considered by 57% of the plans only. That's understandable. It's a costly drug to stockpile, and hospitals may correctly feel that it may be the responsibility either of public health or the government to provide that. Stockpiling for treating staff, we know in Ontario has been a push to get that set up, and 76% have done so. And stockpiling and the prophylaxis for staff likewise. You can see that the priority list for receiving the antivirals, however, has only been considered in 53%. Likewise, a low level for the distribution and the security procedures around this and the storage. So some of the logistics around antiviral drugs still have a long ways to go. What about some of the vaccination operational issues? Well, we can say that really it's got a long way to go. Obviously, the vaccine would take a while to arrive, but about overall half of hospitals have described their storage procedures for a vaccine should and when it become available, the security for a vaccine, the distribution, and the very interesting issue of the priority list for recipients of the vaccine. So vaccine issues, as they become clearer based on research, will be very important in the future as we develop our plan. What about the clinical care section of how you're going to care for patients? Well, this one, as you can see, is highly variable. Screening new patients and visitors for febrile respiratory infection seems to be well institutionalized in plans in Ontario, and that's a good thing. Patient assessment protocols is still got a ways to go. Triage procedures look good. Laboratory procedures, not too bad, but the clinical care pathways, only 41%. So there's a fair bit of work needs to be done. And again, the ethical framework is still not there in many of the pandemic plans. The services that will be continued or suspended, as we've talked before, asking it in a new way gets you the same results, about 83%, and the availability and distribution of beds around 80%. So clearly here we've learned that the clinical care components, particularly as they relate to assessment protocols, clinical care pathways, and an ethical framework, have a fair bit of work to do. Some of the other clinical care issues that are still outstanding would be things like alternate care sites. Now, that is getting more clarity in the Ontario plan. Criteria for hospital admission, ICU admission criteria, and then some of the ethical issues, really starting patients on ventilators, removing people on ventilators, and those are issues that really are as much an ethical as a clinical care pathway issue. Well, what about the back operation functions, the so-called business continuity These are essential functions of a hospital. Housekeeping and environmental services will be extremely important, as it always is, and 87% of the hospitals have considered that. Laundry services, about 80%. Food services have been considered in almost all of the pandemic plans. Plan maintenance, accounts receivable and payables, however, and payroll have not. That could lead to fiscal issues in a real hurry during a crisis, and these areas will clearly need to be addressed as plans are advanced. An interesting question is mortuary plans and their interaction with district mortuary plans in other facilities, particularly funeral homes and otherwise. That's only gone on about 38% of the time. So clearly that's going to be a very important area for work. And the mortuary issues for hospitals, as we saw previously, had only been addressed in about 72% of hospitals. Well, what can we conclude from all of this? Well, the Ontario Health Plan for Pandemic Influenza is clearly a the primary resource in Ontario, and that's great. Likewise, the Canadian plan is a very important and central resource, and that, unfortunately, only two-thirds are basing their plan on incident management, and we'd like to have the other one-third take a close look at incident management style planning for themselves. The acute care hospitals do have shortfalls. Certainly the ethical framework, we have a ways to go, because that plays out particularly for difficult areas like clinical care, starting ventilation, stopping ventilation, the use of antivirals and vaccine distribution. Interestingly, 60% of hospitals will be using their website to communicate to staff, and 36% of hospitals have addressed the staffing of alternate care sites, something that will need continued work now that we have a better idea how that's going to happen. A quarter of hospitals have got some surge capacity for parking, but that means most of us don't, and need some alternate arrangement for moving humanity around during these very difficult times. And the stockpiling of cots, for example, and air handling, and likewise for antivirals and vaccines, are still areas that need work in our clinical care protocols. The assessment protocols are still only seen in about 57%, and a quarter of the plans address the whole issue of ventilators, half of the plans only dealt with patient transportation. And these are important logistical and in many ways ethical issues that still do need a fair bit of work. So our overall conclusion, we have a ways to go. Quite a bit has been done. And we should be rightly proud of the extent of pandemic planning that has gone on. I think Ontario has a great deal underway, but there are key areas that still need work as of 2007, and that's not entirely a surprise. This information was essential in developing our pandemic portal. So our pandemic portal is at pandemicportal.ca. The website is live. The site has had the password taken off. It's still under construction, and just today I've noticed that a little more work to do, but the site is live, and we hope to do official launch very soon in November this month in 2008. The web-based education initiative is really entitled Being Prepared is Being Protected, and is being developed, and again, its goal is particularly to help hospitals for pandemic planning in rural and remote settings, but also of being of value to all hospitals throughout Ontario. The front page, in part, looks like this. You will see our color scheme. We took into account issues of color blindness, for example, that you had to take into account to make the site accessible to everyone. It's got kind of a historical front page. Our logo for pandemic portal you can see, and the home site takes you to the table, to the home page, and what says now P5 advisory panel will in fact be the table of contents that takes you to the content. When you go to the table of contents, there are 15 chapters in P5. There's an introduction, there's presentation on very much what you're hearing now on the preparedness assessment for Ontario hospitals. There's a wonderful presentation on the history of pandemics done by Dr. Jackie Duffin, who's the Hanna Professor of the History of Medicine at Queen's. There's an excellent section on ethics, which we've identified as an area. Overview of planning principles and the role of different assessment centers. Overview of the Ontario Emergency Management Unit in the Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care is presented, so you get a concept of their role and how you relate to them. The Ontario Hospital Association has released a Small Rural and Northern Hospital Toolkit, and this is further explored in this chapter, as well as they're presenting important components related to human resources. How to conduct a pandemic exercise is described by our friends in the Brockville region, who've really done a lot of terrific work in this area and bring a lot of expertise that will be very welcome to hospitals in how to conduct pandemic exercises. An excellent section on equipment and supplies, great information on clinical care, and an overview of incident management system from a number of experts in that area. Public health and the role of public health and the interactions with public health, which we know still need to be worked on, is outlined in detail by my friend Dr. Douglas Sider from Niagara Health Region. And we have presentations from the Public Health Agency of Canada to help you and all of us understand the role of our federal agency during a pandemic. And likewise, we're very pleased that our colleagues from the World Health Organization provided a presentation so that we can understand the role of the World Health Organization, which is essential. So we have the World Health Organization, the Public Health Agency of Canada, the Ontario Emergency Measures Unit, public health, all represented, so we can all get a sense of the connectedness between the sectors and how they relate. There's a section on occupational health and infection control, not so much a presentation, but what we would call in the business a meta page that has all of the links to the latest information to help you get through it all. And then there's an evaluation so that you can give us feedback as to your thoughts and experience with the website. When you go into any given chapter, it will explode into three subheadings, being there's a presentation, there's a quiz, so you can test your knowledge, and the quiz provides you immediate feedback. There's a whole section on references and links. And in some of these, for example, in the history of pandemics, just as an example, there are actually two presentations and two quizzes because of the nature and extent of the content. The presentation is a multimedia presentation using a Canadian product known as OnQ. And this product allows us to integrate a slide presentation with a video and picture window and an index of slides, a status indicator, and something that's really neat that you don't see with other products that I've been aware of is internet speed adjustment. So if you've got a low-speed internet connection, you can select the speed. As you can see, the example here is at 1024K kilobits per second, and you can adjust it to a lower level that will allow you to still have access to the presentation. The you can also see that the classic control buttons, forward and pause and reverse, the time remaining, and there's an index along the left that helps you navigate. And in the upper left-hand side, there's a video and picture window of pictures and content that you can use to see extra visual information that embellishes the content. And there's a volume slide button on the lower right as well. There's an extensive section of references and link materials, and this is just an example from the historical bibliography, which Dr. Duffin has put together in an exemplary way, and it's really beautiful what she's put together. And a whole bunch of other useful links will be provided. This is drawn from the ethics chapter done by Dr. Ross Upshur at the University of Toronto, and provides you with access to excellent resources that you might not otherwise have access to. The user survey, you will see there's a at the end you can give us your feedback, and you can see how far you are in completing the survey and such, which is a nice thing to tell you how far along you are. The survey is actually very brief. And I'd like to acknowledge at this time our wonderful P5 team. Matt Melanichin is our project manager. He has, over the last 2 years that this project has been live, he has coordinated it with great skill and allowed us to meet our milestones and objectives on time and on budget. Dr. Brian Schwartz, I'm sure many of you know, is the scientific consultant and coordinator of the Emergency Measures Unit and is an emergency specialist at Sunnybrook and Women's and is the director of the Ulster Center for Pre-Hospital Care and brings a high level of expertise on disaster management and emergency services. Doug Ford is our project consultant, research associate here at Queen's University, and helped us with a great deal of the survey results, which is his level of expertise. And Callie Gunn was our media technician and helped to assemble myriads of content into the presentation material. And Dave Lawrence, our friend at OSM Networks, who are hosting the site for us. So this has been a labor of love over the last 2 years, and we want to acknowledge certainly the Change Foundation, who funded this project, and likewise the Ontario Hospital Association, who have been enormously helpful in assisting us with this project and will actually be taking over the website to maintain it and keep it accessible to everyone. We had a P5 advisory panel of those listed who gave us advice, and we're very grateful for their counsel to create what we hope will be a very effective pandemic planning portal. So, Paul, I will stop there, and I hope that this presentation has been helpful to everyone, and I do invite you to go to www.pandemicportal.ca as the portal is open now to the public.
Dick, thank you very much. It's been a large project. I know you're no stranger to large projects, but this one has been a lot of data. How much have you had to motivate people to keep wrangling all this data and sending you all the data? Has it been a very difficult job?
It's been a lot of fun, I have to be honest. I mean, one of the key things is the presentations, as you saw, are done by people from the field. And we heard that in the needs assessment, and we heard that people wanted this, and so many people volunteered their time to provide this content, and you know, we're immensely grateful to them because we wouldn't have the portal without them. And it also makes the content very tangible, very real, grounded in their experience, which will be similar to your own, and makes it highly credible. So, you know, very busy folks donated their time very graciously, and we're immensely grateful. And for those who filled out the survey and for the various Chica chapters, for example, who likewise presented, you know, this to their, you know, people in their region to help get the survey done and help us with that.
Thank you. We will not be able to take questions live during this teleclass, but folk, if you have a question you'd like to pose to Dr. Zoutman, and if you don't have his email address, please feel free to send it to me, and I will make sure I get it forwarded on to him. So, Dick, thank you very much again for a really great presentation and for being willing to do this on almost a moment's notice. Thank you very much for that.
My pleasure, Paul. Anytime.
All right. And to everyone else, we'll talk again soon. Goodbye.